I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and this is Up to Date. The anticipation has been building throughout the postseason, and it's never been stronger than right here, right now. We're coming to you live this morning from Kauffman Stadium as they get the place ready for tomorrow's first World Series game. This hour, we'll look at the team's prospects with sports writer Joe Posnanski, who's been predicting that the Royals would make it this far for years. We'll find out whether he thinks the Giants will tower over the K this week. And every moment around here is feeling pretty darn historic. The Royals Hall of Fame director and a few other baseball insiders will put it into context for us. That's all ahead on Up to Date after this hour's news. Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. We're coming to you live this morning from the K, the center of the sports universe in this country, on the eve of the 2014 World Series. I just love saying this. Kansas City is the home team for this series, and the atmosphere here in the stadium is electric, and there's nobody even in the stands. Senior producer Steven Steigman has lined up a top-notch show this morning. We'll be visiting with former Star sports columnist Joe Posnanski. Art Stewart, the longtime Royal scout who can spin a pretty good tale, will be here. Announcer Steve Fizyak will drop by. So will Royal spokesman Toby Cook and Kurt Nelson, director of the Royals Hall of Fame. And did I mention that the World Series opens here in Kansas City tomorrow night? I'm just going to keep saying that because I like how it sounds. Okay, we're at the K, and we're joined now by former Star sports columnist Joe Posnanski. He's a national columnist for NBC Sports, a former senior writer at Sports Illustrated, and a one-time National Sports Writer of the Year. And, Joe, welcome back. So good to have you back here on the program.
Yeah, it's very exciting times in Kansas City.
Well, you had a terrific column in the Star yesterday, Joe, on the front page, in which you talked about how painful it is for you to have covered this team during the down years, but not this year. Did you feel cheated during your years in Kansas City to have not gotten a chance to cover a winning baseball team?
Well, I wouldn't say I felt cheated exactly. I would say that there were times it felt a little bit repetitive to write about a team that that never seemed to quite get over the hump, and I always felt bad for Kansas City. I always felt bad for the town, and with such a great baseball history and so many great baseball fans, that there was, you know, really very, very rarely was there anything really exciting about the team, anything really hopeful about the team. But of course, I was just joking around about the feeling cheated part. It was great to write about those Royals teams, and I'm obviously very, very excited to be coming to Kansas City for the World Series now.
Is it easier or harder to cover a losing team over a winning team, or does it matter, Joe?
Well, I don't think it's necessarily easier or harder either way, but I think when you have something happen again and again and again, it gets harder, and that is true as well for when you cover a team that always wins. You find it difficult to try and find something new to say, and with the Royals, it was obviously the opposite problem. The team not only never won, but really they were more or less the same story year after year after year. So I wouldn't say it was ever hard. They were always entertaining, and they were always funny to write about in some ways. And I enjoyed it immensely. And it would have been nice to sprinkle a couple of winning seasons in there. And there was one in 2003 that was a lot of fun to write about. But again, to me, the big thing is everybody just gets so much more excited about a winner. The whole city just revolves around it in a way that I certainly saw with the Chiefs, certainly saw with KU basketball and K-State football and Missouri basketball and football at different times. And there's just a different energy around the team and a different energy around the city that is so much fun to plug into. And I do wish I could have done that a little more often with the Royals.
We're visiting with former Star sports columnist Joe Posnanski. And, Joe, you're going to love seeing the K when you get here, probably in the morning. The World Series bunting is sort of hanging from the different tiers of the stadium. The World Series logo is stenciled onto the field. And you look at it, and it looks great, and you sort of have to shake your head back and forth a few times to realize that's really there. It's not some sort of mirage I'm looking at out here.
Yeah, it's so cool. I mean, to me, every part of it feels so new and so exciting, and really, in a lot of ways, so unbelievable. I mean, it's not only that the Royals' history in recent years has been so troubled, it's also that this team didn't look all that great for much of the year. I mean, I think in July, you looked at this team and thought, well, it's just going to be another sort of mediocre season. I guess mediocre is better than terrible, which was what they were before. So to see this now and to see how exciting this team is, and I think they've really, in addition to capturing Kansas City, have really captured the country. And, you know, when was the last time we could say that?
On your blog, joeposnanski.com, you put up a piece you wrote in 2006, Joe, on Dayton Moore, the Royals general manager. When you talk about him in this piece, you talk about how much courage it took for him to stay the course over the past few years. How tough do you think it was for Dayton Moore to stick with his plan, Joe?
Well, I think it was tough for everybody in the organization to stick with the plan. You know, because when it's not working, and for a few years there it was not working, people want change. That's just a dramatic, force that is in all of sports. People want a new general manager. They want a new direction. They want a new manager. They want a new everything. I mean, everything is driven toward change. And it's hard to stay the course, and it's doubly hard when you just don't know for sure. I mean, you believe it's going to work. You believe that the things you are doing are going to lead to success, but very often they don't. And you know, people tend to lose faith fairly quickly in today's day and age. So I think for everybody, I mean, there was certainly a lot of pressure on the Royals to make changes, but David Glass stayed with it. I think there was a lot of pressure on the fans to sort of give up hope, and they never did. And I think there was a lot of pressure on Dayton Moore to shift from what he really believed was the way to build this team. And, you know, it so many things go into building a winning team. Some of it is being smart. Some of it is being lucky. Some of it is working hard. And, you know, some of it is just this little piece of magic that you just never know if you're going to get. And very, very good teams the last 15 years, like the Oakland A's, have never been to the World Series. But the Kansas City Royals are there now.
You know, that's such a good point, because even our manager, Ned Yost, out here was asked after, you know, one of the series, and he said, what was it that turned this team around? And, you know, Ned said, well, something clicked. I'm not even sure what it was myself. This is the manager of the team talking, but some magic took place and the team turned the corner.
Yeah, and I think that's what I really think that's what it is. They came into the playoffs, just barely getting there, and obviously we're losing to Oakland 7-3. And if they end up losing that game, as you would expect them to, this is a fun season, but nobody thinks of it as a magical one the way that that it comes, after they win that game and then win the back-to-back extra inning games against the Angels, and then that just incredible series against Baltimore where everything worked. This is how it works. I mean, every so often you just run into this perfect blend of success and talent and luck, and it's been 30 years since that's happened in Kansas City, and it's great to see it happen again.
You know, Joe, in your piece on Dayton Moore, you have one of these little magical Joe Posnanski vignettes, which I've always come to appreciate so much over the years. You talked about the vision that Dayton Moore had even in 2006 when he first came here, and his vision as it pertained to this team and the Country Club Plaza. Tell us about that.
Yeah, it was, you know, it was really probably the first really big piece I did on Dayton after he came to town. And he was, he kept saying, I every time I get down on this, I think about the Plaza, and it, and at first he wouldn't tell me why, and finally, after a little while, I said, okay, you have to tell me what's this thing about the Plaza that you keep thinking about. He goes, I think that's the perfect place for the parade. And, you know, he was thinking honestly like that in 2006. The day he got there, he went around with his wife and rolled through the Plaza and said, this is where the parade should be. And, you know, I mean, I think if the Royals do finish the job and get and win the World Series, there are going to be plenty of people that are going to want the parade in other places like downtown. But
yeah,
Plaza would be a pretty good place for a parade, though. It'd be a pretty good place for a parade.
Oh, that'd be a fun argument to have out here. Joe, what one player, before I let you go here, what one player from the Royals do you want to write about and tell the country about when you're here in Kansas City the next few days?
Well, I'm working on a big piece on three, actually, and I would say it's that three-man bullpen of Kelvin Herrera and Greg Holland and Wade Davis. That three-man bullpen has been the difference. In my opinion, that's the difference between the Royals and other teams. It's the difference between the Royals and the years past. That bullpen has changed the entire dynamic of Kansas City baseball, and so I want to tell that story.
Well, Joe Posnanski will be coming here from Los Angeles. He'll be covering the World Series for NBC Sports. And, Joe, you're in Los Angeles right now. Safe travels, and a lot of folks will be looking forward to seeing you when you're here in Kansas City, including Art Stewart, who's sitting right to my left here this morning waiting to come on later on in the show. So we'll look forward to having you out here, Joe.
Well, I can't wait to see you. Let Art tell some stories. That's going to be way better than my time.
That sounds good. That's Joe Posnanski, the former Star sports columnist, again, for the Kansas City Star. And now with us here in the Frank White Lounge is Toby Cook, who's just wrapping up his eighth full season as vice president for community affairs and publicity for the Kansas City Royals. And, Toby, it's always good to have you here, and congratulations, along with the rest of the organization here. You got to be pretty pumped up.
We're very, very excited, Steve. And who would have thought when we all got together on opening day, you were down in the Diamond Club, that here we would be sitting on the eve of the World Series, and the Kansas City Royals are one of the teams.
Well, I'm not sure I was thinking that. I got to ask you, were you thinking that?
No, I wasn't dreaming anything past just getting into the playoffs.
Yeah.
I think we all wanted the 29-year monkey off of our back, and I don't remember feeling the kind of joy as a baseball fan when we clinched a playoff berth.
Oh, my gosh.
It was almost more than what's happened since then, because winning the ALD, American League Division Series, winning the ALCS, it's been so surreal. But the postseason berth was more concrete. We finally made it. Then we look up 4 days later, and we're already in the World Series.
Yeah. You know, that's a great word for what we're all experiencing here, surreal, because as I told Joe Posnanski, looking down on the field this morning and seeing the World Series insignia sort of, you know, put into the grass, you know, so neatly by home plate there, you look at it and you're sort of like, wow, that's really happening here in Kansas City.
I have a feeling that it has a lot to do with what we've done in the postseason. So we got into the postseason, and that's great. Well, we'll see what happens. Everything else is gravy, right? Well, we win this wild, wild card game, and then we go out and we beat the Angels three times. We beat the Orioles four times. It's not supposed to happen that way.
No.
And if we would have grinded it out over five games against one team and seven games against the other, it might have seemed different, but it feels like we woke up one day and we just advanced to the next round. Well, guess what? There's no next round after this.
Mm-hmm.
This is it. And
this
that's it. Maybe part of why it feels the way it does.
We're visiting with Kansas City Royals spokesman Toby Cook. And just curious, Toby, how much sleep are you getting these days in a position like yours?
Well, not a lot, because
as I told
you on opening day, we do this about once a year where we have all of the media out for the home opener. Well, we did it again right after we clinched the playoff berth that Monday after in Chicago. Well, we thought, well, we're going to have to do it again if we get to the World Series, and we got to the World Series. So I'm living one of those lives like a 24-hour news cycle, and I've got to sleep at some point. I said to an MLB person a couple of days ago, I literally don't know when I'm going to sleep. I know you say that, I don't know when I'm going to sleep, but I literally don't know, maybe from 2 to 4 a.m. That's probably not going to work after a few days, but we're living on an awful lot of coffee and adrenaline, that's for sure.
Is that literally what you're doing right now, going to bed at 2, getting up at 4?
No, not yet.
Is it something close to that?
I'm getting geared up for that. It's more like a midnight to 4 or 5 o'clock regimen right now, and I hope that would be a really good reason why the Royals would just sweep this thing. I'm not counting any wins before they happen, but, man, if we could do this sooner rather than later, then maybe I can get a longer nap.
And again, Toby, just guessing here, friends you didn't even know were friends are probably calling you up asking you, hey, buddy, you got an extra ticket or two for the World Series?
Yeah. If I had a dollar for every time somebody has said, I know you're swamped,
but
or I know that you're getting hit all the time, for I could buy all of them tickets on the secondary market.
Art Stewart's sitting here laughing about this, too. I bet you're getting hit up, too, Art.
Yeah. Well, and I was sharing with a friend earlier that it's somewhat frustrating in our position because primarily my job is the community and charity initiatives, and the Royals through Major League Baseball and former players through the what they call the Players Give Back, the Alumni Association, we give about 150,000 tickets a year away to not-for-profit groups or organizations or people that are in hardship situations. A better way to say it, those that may never go to a baseball game.
But not this week.
But not this week. And I really mean this with sincerity and not the way it's going to sound. We've heard from a lot of hardship cases, and we physically don't have the space for the people that have great stories that we can't take care of. So we're frustrated, and we keep saying, you know, we'll take care of you in 2015, but not this week.
I mean, the stadium holds, what, 39,000, 40,000 people?
Yeah, it's about 38,500 in the seats, and then the fire marshal will let us get up a couple of thousand beyond that for standing room only. So the top that we've had in the postseason is about 40,500.
Hey, how many tickets could you have sold for the World Series if seating was not limited at all?
I'm saying maybe 65,000. I mean, the ugly stadiums of yesteryear that held 60 and 70 and 80,000, we could fill those because of the World Series. But, you know, this stadium serves us well for most of the season, but we can't fit another body in than what we're going to do the next 2 days.
You know, you mentioned the playoff game against the A's. That was the first game in which the team was down by four runs in the eighth inning and makes this historic, and literally it was an historic comeback. I imagine that was exciting for everyone around here as it was for those of us watching at home. But for those of you who have put so much of yourselves into this team and into this organization, I imagine you're hyped on that comeback three or four times beyond even what I was watching it.
Without a doubt. And when we won it in the bottom of the 12th inning, that seemed surreal as well. But it was like the first step, and then we thought we were going into the grind. And like I said, we won a whole bunch of games. So that's been a lot of fun. It was an emotional roller coaster because we were in it, then all of a sudden in the lead, we're out of the lead really, really fast. And my feeling was that what a great season that for 4 months is now going to be remembered, fair or unfair, to a pitching change by our manager, Ned Yost. And he is going to win. If he doesn't win manager of the year, I'll be surprised. He's going to win it anyway, but I didn't want that to be the thing that people talked about all offseason long. And by God, we came back. And then being back in it and then losing it in the 12th, it probably would have been less of a sting. But, man, it was really, really good to win that so that we wouldn't be talking about it for 4 months. And now all we're going to be talking about is what's happened the last 2 weeks.
And now Ned Yost walks into a restaurant in a country club plaza, and the place comes to a halt. Everyone stands up and cheers the manager of the Kansas City Royals.
Yeah, they love you when you win, and you got to grind through it when you don't.
Toby, just a couple of other things. I'm wondering how an organization like the Royals gears up for something as extraordinary as a World Series, because I'm assuming here that every piston in this organization is firing in rapid fire fashion right now. Am I seeing that correctly?
That's correct. And everything that we do on opening day, we're trying to get at that picture perfect plus. We don't put a de-emphasis on games 2 through 81, but the first game is always the biggie because we're going to have a full house.
Of course.
Well, then when you add the fact that you've got national television broadcasts and coverage, you've got Major League Baseball that comes in, and it's really their show from here on out when the World Series starts.
They take over, in
yes,
a sense.
Yeah. Pretty much. And we've just got to be at the top of our game. But then, in order to be at the top of your game, you sort of have to do it the way that you always did it. you can't get overwhelmed. So when we started into postseason, we approached it like, well, it's another homestand coming up. We've just got to put on a baseball game with a really big crowd. But this is the busiest that I've ever seen Kauffman Stadium.
What about the dignitaries who will be here for the opening game of the 2014 World Series? Any sense you can tell us of who's going to be here that folks might recognize?
No. And the reason
I can't
only because Major League Baseball is the one that chooses all of the first pitches and the national anthem singers. And they're going to be announcing that, I'm told, within hours. So I have to defer to Major League Baseball when they announce.
I assume these will be recognizable names that people will look forward to seeing.
Without a doubt. And we've already seen the Rob Riggle, Jason Sudeikis, Paul Rudds of the world that have come in. And I'm sure that we'll see those types of celebrities and some surprises. Governor Brownback has been here before, Governor Nixon, and we're going to see them during the World Series. Senator Bob Dole, who's going to make a trip back from Washington, D.C., is going to be honored in our Heroes seat on Tuesday night, which is the season-long promotion that we've done to recognize men and women in the armed forces. He's actually going to be recognized as a figurehead of the award and then is donating his seat to somebody that's serving in the armed forces now. And this is a kick for him, we understood from his staff, because at 91 years old and in a wheelchair, we're going to get him down to the seat. He'll be recognized, but it was kind of fun to hear that he'd been following along with the Royals team and he was just getting such a kick out of how they were doing.
I'm guessing, too, you have all kinds of special needs, special requests people making to accommodate folks who are going to be here the next few nights.
Yeah, we can go from about 12 people in the press box on a Tuesday night in May to more than 300 credentialed media from all over the world. So we've got...
Is that how many you're going to have? I was going to ask you.
More than 300. And then on top of all of that... The Major League Baseball driven increased security, because this is a global event in the sense that it's shown all over the world, and when the Department of Homeland Security is a part of the security measures, you know that it's kind of a big deal. So all of those things are moving behind the scenes. I don't even know half of what they're doing, but it's a goal, just like the All-Star Week, to be able to have this thing go without incident.
Well, that's Toby Cook. He's Vice President for Community Affairs and Publicity here for the Kansas City Royals. And, Toby, I've always thought you're probably the best Vice President in Major League Baseball. And, hey, if you got a couple of extra tickets for the game tomorrow night, I'd really appreciate that. That would just be great.
I'm going to call Senator Dole and say, you're out. I got to take care of this guy over at the public radio station.
That'll be the day.
Yeah.
Toby Cook, sure appreciate your time very much.
Thanks, Steve.
Okay, I want to introduce now Kurt Nelson, who's the director of the Royals Hall of Fame, which is located right out there over the left field wall here at the K. And Kurt Nelson was with us on opening day. He's back with us today. And, Kurt, it's always good to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
I'm just guessing, Kurt, what items from this historic postseason have you scarfed up for the Royals Hall of Fame? Because I'm thinking there have been a few items that you've probably wanted here. Am I right?
There's a few things that I would like to have that I don't know whether I'll have them or not. But there's a couple of really cool things. That, like, today I came in, the Royals Hall of Fame came in possession of the last out from ALCS Game 4.
The last out meaning what? What was
That was the ground out, J.J. Hardy to
the ball
Mike Mustak.
It's
the baseball.
You're talking
about. The baseball.
Mm-hmm.
So from Greg Holland to J.J. Hardy to Mike Moustakas crossed the diamond to Eric Hosmer, and the Royals were American League champions.
That's when Hosmer jumped. I worried he jumped too early. His foot had left the bag before he needed
help. You have to make sure that the game is over, that's for sure.
Yeah. So you want what else have you gotten?
Oh, there's just all kinds of things. If you go back to the clinching game, so you try to follow this entire path along the way, and you get some key bases that we have on hand. We were talking about that wild card game earlier. Third base from that 12th inning, Eric Hosmer hits the one out triple off the top of the wall to get that tying run to third base. So that base that he ran to, we have that. That's also the base, of course, he scored from, and the one that Christian Colon rounded just a few minutes after that on the Sal Perez hit.
That's a good
to,
one.
To win the AL wild card game.
What are those bases made of? They look very spongy and soft on TV. What are they?
They're made of rubber, actually, and it's like a vulcanized rubber. So it's a little bit like a hockey puck or something like that, if you've felt that before. And then they're actually cleated to that ground. Those bases don't move. You know, you see sometimes old time where the bases would actually move or whatever. That's you got to watch your ankles out there because
they don't move.
They do not move.
There's a spike in the bottom that they drive it into a hole in the ground, right?
And so it's goes down into the ground. So to dislodge one of those bases would really take quite an effort to be able to. You have to be careful about that when it's raining out there as you watch the guys around the bases. You really want to touch the corner of the bag. You don't really want to touch the top of that bag because you touch the top of that bag, you may just slide off the top of it. And so you have to be careful about that. But
we're coming to you live from the K this morning. We're visiting with Kurt Nelson, who's the director of the Royals Hall of Fame. Kurt, how do you figure out what you want for the Hall of Fame? Is it just sort of your gut instinct that a certain ball or glove or bat needs to be there? Or does a team come together and say, these are the three or four things that we definitely have to have?
Well, it's sort of a mixed effort. The guys down in the clubhouse do a great job of keeping in mind the things that might be good for the Royals Hall of Fame to have. I think of key moments is always key to me. It's like, so I was talking about that third base. Third base is looks like any other third base, but it's tied to a specific moment. It's tied to that Eric Hosmer triple. It's tied to the fact that Christian Colon rounded that bag and scored the winning run from that base.
Is that your decision to go after that bag, or is it a group decision?
We sort of work together about what is being kept. That in this day and age, there's a lot more things kept. MLB has an authentication program where there's actually someone down there authenticating items as they leave the field. So there's a lot more items that are taken off of a field, especially in postseason play like this. And then you do sort of have to make a designation for what would be an important item. And from my point of view, a storytelling item, something that really goes back to a particular storyline that can help illustrate a particular story, and that's what some of these items really do.
Okay, a question about something else that's in your Hall of Fame. It's George Brett's pine tar bat. You know, my son and I saw that bat out there, and we still talk about it. You know, I see bats used today in games that seem to have as much pine tar on them as George's bat did in that game against the Yankees. Am I right about that?
Well, they still use pine tar. Sometimes you don't see it quite as much because the actual substance that they put on the bat, the pine tar itself, is much more of a clear than it used to be. And it used to go on a rag, and that's why it would appear as if it was brown from the second you put on it. Nowadays, it's a little clearer when they put on it, but it rolls around in the dirt and everything, and that's why you see it. It'll sort of build up, especially on a player's helmet. Like Alex Gordon is a perfect example of one of our guys. That he's got pine tar all over his helmet, but that's really the stickum from the pine tar and then his dirty hands and things like that that's been going up there so often. So that's why you see that. But they still use the same sort of material, although when George used it, it had a little different color to it.
So how much interest in the Royals Hall of Fame, Kurt, will this postseason spur, do you think, going forward?
Well, hopefully it'll do a lot. I mean, we're putting together exhibits. We already have exhibits up for the clinching and the wild card and the ALDS and trying to get an exhibit up hopefully today for the ALCS. So that's the beauty of having a space that we have here in Kauffman Stadium is history. Like I say, history can happen any day, every day.
And recent history is going to be
and when it
on
does,
exhibit.
It can go on exhibit immediately. So we, like I said, this postseason already. Two displays already up on this postseason alone.
Wow.
And hopefully the last chapter hasn't been written yet.
You guys move fast.
You got to move fast.
Almost like Gore going around the bases.
And bring that story back to Royals fans. So this postseason has so many stories to tell. And like I said, we're not done yet. We need four more wins. I was like Toby. I would not mind at all if they came 1, 2, 3, 4 like we've been doing, but we got 7 chances to get 4, and we're going to get 4.
That's Kurt Nelson. He's director of the Royals Hall of Fame. It's right out there above the left field bleachers. And Kurt, it's always good to have you here. Thanks for taking some time.
Thanks again for having me.
Let's take a break as we come to you live from the K on this eve of the 2014 World Series. We're in the center of the sports universe in America these days, right here out at Kauffman Stadium. In our second half, we'll talk to Royals broadcaster Steve Fizioc and KCUR's Greg Eklin and Royals super scout Art Stewart sitting right here to my left here in the Frank White Lounge. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. And we're back. I'm Steve Kraske. There's a lot of misinformation. Hear about the future of Kemper Arena, just go to kcur.org. Tomorrow on the program, a look at the psychology of young people and voting. The crew of Up to Date is, we're the lucky ones today. We're coming to you live from the K here on a beautiful autumn afternoon here at Kauffman Stadium. The 2014 World Series begins tomorrow night in Kansas City. Everybody knows it. Everybody's psyched. And the weather forecast, as you just heard from Linda Scher, is going to be just picture perfect for the first two games of this series. Well, sitting right next to me now is a Royals legend, Art Stewart. He's a scout, a major league executive who's worked to shape Kansas City Royals and the team longer than anybody else. He has a new book out written with the star Sam Mellinger. That book is The Art of Scouting, 7 decades chasing hopes and dreams in Major League Baseball. And Art Stewart, so good to have you here. Welcome to Up to Date.
It's great to be here, Steve.
Well, you've seen a lot of Royals teams, Art. What's different about this one?
Well, this one here compares a little bit to 1985. Defense, speed.
Pitching. Yeah.
And
the trademark of the Kansas City Royals in so many ways.
It is, yeah. And with this big ballpark. I look back to 85, and we had the emergence of Brett Saberhagen, Mark Kubica, who didn't pitch in a World Series but helped us get there, Danny Jackson. And then I look at this club here, and I see a young Yordano Ventura, Duffy, Kelvin Herrera coming out of the pen.
Yeah.
And there's a similarity. Also, with the defense, we had good defense there with Frank White and Willie Wilson, many others, but it didn't quite compare with this. This is in 62 years I've ever seen.
Is that right?
And also the speed. We had a Willie Wilson, we had Frank White then, but this club has more speed, and we have the extra secret weapon now, of course, with the emergence of Terrence Gore, who is the fastest player in baseball.
Fastest man in baseball. Watching him run the bases is a thrill in and of itself, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, it's tremendous.
Art, did you see this coming with this team? Did you see this success sort of in the offing as we got into July and August, or are you as surprised as a lot of other folks are?
No, I saw it coming to a degree. I just didn't know when it was coming, and it goes back to what you previously talked about, Dayton Moore's plan and his vision. All of it has come to pass. And Dayton did it the right way, developing your own, having the biggest and best scouting system, player development department, and having a big international part in baseball with some of the best scouts, which we do with Rene Francisco heading it. And it's exemplified by looking out on that field with a Ventura starting, Herrera coming in as all-star catcher behind the plate. But in addition to what you're seeing here that was developed, and I see all our farm clubs too, and so I knew that some of these players were going to be special. And I had seen some of them in high school, including Moustakas and Hosmer and Billy Butler, and I saw Gordon, and so it's a very, very personal to me, this club, for seeing these kids from an amateur standpoint to a pro standpoint, and it all coming together. And the other thing is, Dayton, what he wanted to do, we did, and it stocked the system deeper than it ever has, that enabled him to make a deal for a Shields and a Wade Davis, and Greinke wanting to leave and bringing us a great shortstop and great center fielder in Kane.
We're coming to you live from the K. We're visiting with longtime scout Art Stewart with the Royals. I want to ask you about some of the points you make in your new book, Art, The Art of Scouting. This has always puzzled me, you know, why it's so hard to forecast which players will make great major leaguers. It's such a hit-and-miss business, this business of scouting. You say this in the book, and this is a quote, "In our sport, if you can get one very good player and another starter out of 50-some picks, that's a great draft." I mean, a great draft on such a low percentage of success, Art, that doesn't seem right to me, but it is.
But it is, and in any other business, you would be a failure.
Mm-hmm.
No question about it.
But it works out.
Yes, it does. And then you have the exceptions to drafts. One of our great drafts was after we won the World Series.
Mm-hmm.
And we were picking last, and we got a Bo Jackson, we got a Tom Gordon, we got a Jeff Conine. We got eight players that went to the big leagues. That was exceptional.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had some others like that, too. But if any time you get above two solid big league players, it's considered successful in Major League Baseball.
And given that, on the same point, you talk about the 1995 draft in the book, and the Royals were picking between two high school outfielders from Puerto Rico. One was named Carlos Beltran. The other was named Juan Lebron, okay? Today, nearly 20 years later, Beltran may very well wind up in the Hall of Fame, and no one's ever heard of Juan Lebron. You guys wound up taking... thrilled to learn that Beltran was still available in the second. But again, how could you have had a debate between these two guys when the outcome, at least 20 years later, seems so obvious?
Well, it shows you how inexact.
Exactly.
Inexact the draft is and scouting is. I mean, if we were so smart, we would have taken George Brett in the first round instead of the second.
That's right.
But reflecting back to what you just mentioned about LeBron and I'll never forget our draft room. I was scouting director, and we had half our cross-checkers like LeBron and half of them like Beltran. It was so close. But our scout, Johnny Ramos in Puerto Rico, who had scouted so many great players, he compared LeBron to a young Juan Gonzalez.
Wow.
And that kind of tipped the scale, and we went that way. And lo and behold, we come around to the second round, and you talk about a celebration. We felt we got two first-rounders in the draft. And unfortunately, LeBron's career wasn't talent so much as it was makeup and other problems that didn't get him to the big leagues.
You know, you say in this book that always take hitters over pitchers if you're out to start a ball club. I always heard it was just the opposite, that they should build around pitching, but you say, it's the other way.
Well, the reason I say that is that a pitcher goes out every fifth day, but a great hitter, whether it's a Griffey, an A-Rod, they're playing every day for you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way I kind of lean toward, and many of the old-timers do, too.
Art Stewart, the legendary Royals scout, is my guest here. You were very close to Bo Jackson, the great Royals outfielder who obviously also played in the NFL. You disclose in this book that Bo was going to retire after the football season that he was playing in when he actually got hurt. How do you know that?
Well, I know that for the simple fact that my wife, who passed away a number of years ago, Donna, was very close to Linda Jackson, Bo's wife, and she mentioned to this was 91 as the season was coming to a close. She said Bo promised her she didn't like him playing two sports,
mm-hmm.
and promised her that would be the last year, and that he would devote the rest of his career to baseball. And the other thing that factored into it, a lot of people don't know this, and I think it's the first time I discussed it. I don't know if I recall if I put it in a book, but Bo told me that after the injury that it, you know, really ended his baseball career, he said, "I'll always family and I will always live comfortably because doing the two-sport image for Nike made us financially set for the rest of our lives."
Oh, I'm sure.
Of course, Bo, I talk to him often, and he's gone on to. So many things. He owns a bank in Oak Brook, Illinois.
Oh, really?
He owns a health food business that's nationally that's doing great. And he opened up a Bo Jackson Sports Palace. It's similar to our Mac and Sites in Chicago, only it's about five times bigger. And it was so successful. The waiting line was so big. They built another one. And then they built one in Cleveland, of all places, became successful. And now they're in the process of doing one in Miami, Puerto Rico, Dallas, wow. and L.A. So, wow. so Bo's a very successful businessman.
No one needs to worry about Bo Jackson these days.
Not at all.
Just one final point about Bo Jackson, Art. I love the line that hard that man hit a baseball. And Buck said he only heard two other men hit the ball harder than Bo. He's talking about the sound of the ball hitting the bat. Those two people were who?
You know, I have to preface that by saying it happened right here. And if you look out and we're looking at that scoreboard, Bo's the only one that ever hit that scoreboard. And he did it twice in batting practice. And it was right after we signed him. Huh. During batting practice. And
he just sauntered on down there and thought, I'm going to show these guys what I can do.
That's right. John mm-hmm. Watham was pitching, and we've never seen a ball hit that far. And that's when Buck was sitting there, and he said, I've only heard that twice in my life other than today. And he says, one was Josh Gibson, and the other was Babe Ruth.
No kidding. No kidding. Well, Art Stewart, such a pleasure to have you here. Enjoy the World Series here with the Royals, and I hope folks will enjoy your book, The Art of Scouting, as well. What a pleasure to have you here.
It was great being here, and I'm just hoping we're looking forward to a fifth champagne party.
That sounds pretty good. Art Stewart, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, again, we're coming to you live from the K here this morning. Kauffman Stadium, the center of the sports universe anywhere in the world these days. You can't say that very often. The 2014 World Series opens up tomorrow night here in Kansas City. Joining me now here in the Frank White Lounge, our Royals play-by-play announcer, Steve Fiziak. And, Steve, always good to have you here. Welcome back.
Great to be here. Thank you very much for having me on.
In case you are, Greg Eklund is with us as well. Greg, good to have you, too.
My pleasure being here.
Well, how likely is it, Steve Fiziak, that we're going to win this thing coming up, this World Series? How are you seeing it playing out?
Well, I have been drinking the Ned Yost Kool-Aid, so I cast them one at a time. And that's the way the team has really looked in postseason. It's really been remarkable because a 162-game schedule is an up-and-down roller coaster.
Yes,
this team experienced extreme highs and extreme lows, but I really believe when they clinched a playoff spot in late September in Chicago that the team exhaled, and they've been playing with a different kind of confidence, a reckless freedom, and their style of baseball has been absolutely perfect. But I think these individuals have come together, and together as a team, they've become a real force in postseason.
That's a great phrase, a reckless freedom. Greg Eklund, do you agree with that?
I would. I have to admit, and Steve could probably attest to this, that leading up to that point, there were times during the season when I was just very frustrated watching this team because you knew they could be so much better than what they were showing, and there were so many good pitching performances. Didn't score enough runs.
Yeah.
And then after that Oakland game, and starting with that Oakland game in the wild card playoff, it clicked, and it seems to have clicked ever since.
Now, Steve, why does a team come together in that sort of magical way? We were talking with Joe Posnanski about that earlier in our hour today, and you know, even our manager, Ned Yost, is saying, I'm not sure what it was that clicked. Well, what was it, in your estimation, that finally brings a team together after all these frustrating games that Greg was just talking about?
I think it's true throughout baseball, and I think sometimes we stare so much at our problems. And San Francisco has problems. The New York Yankees had problems. The Los Angeles Dodgers had problems. But when you're watching your team 162 times a year, you see, and sometimes you stare more at the mistakes than you do the successes. John Wooden used to tell me, he said, if we would stare more at our blessings as we do our misfortunes, would be a happier society. And I think that's true with sports, because we see the warts on our team. We see the things that we don't do well. When, in fact, this team won 89 games, and then they once they get into the playoffs. But there's a saying that goes, my mom used to say, you've got to try to have fun. But when you try to have fun, you don't have fun.
Mm-hmm.
When you just have fun, it's amazing how things can happen. And that's why I think this team, if you look at them individually, they're not as good as the Angels, and they're not as good as the Baltimore Orioles. But collectively, they're a force, and they came together. And the classic example of all what I'm talking about took place in Game 4 of the American League Championship Series. First inning, our first two guys get on. Our hottest hitter is at the plate, Lorenzo Cain. He's like 8 for 12 going into that at-bat. And he sacrifices. Mm-hmm. And Ned Yost says later, he goes, I didn't call for that sacrifice. That was Lorenzo Cain. And to me, that was the ultimate team demonstration. Here's a young man, the hottest hitter, sacrificing himself to move runners so the team can score. Mm-hmm. And the team had success scoring those two runs. And interestingly enough, those were the only two runs they needed to win that game.
And the ball never came out of the infield
in
that inning either, did it? Yeah. Greg Eklund, you know, you do get a sense, too, that this team is certainly not overwhelmed by the idea of playing in this worldwide showcase that begins tomorrow night. Are you seeing it that way?
I'm seeing a team that is very loose and a team that, although upper management may be on the general manager level, but not as much on the field level with Ned Yost, but a team that learned how to win along the way, because mm-hmm. a lot of these guys who came up through the system played together and they learned how to win. They just never figured how to translate that on the major league level. I think by having fun, as Steve had mentioned, and playing loose, I think it has finally come to at a better time.
And you think they're loose even heading into the World Series based on what you've seen
the last
couple days?
I think they enjoy being on the big stage. They're used to being high-profile guys because they were number one draft choices, and they've been under the microscope since they were number one draft choices. And I think that has translated to the way they are able to handle the spotlight now.
And yet, Steve Fiziak, you know, and yet the Giants have been to the big dance here three times in the last 5 years. This is all brand new to the Royals. I mean, everyone says when you get to the World Series, experience makes a big difference.
I really believe that they've done a great job of not reading the newspapers or listening to the radio stations.
And guys like me saying stuff like that, yeah.
Really, because guys like myself, because we break down everything. We look at the statistics and we break things down. And these guys aren't looking at the statistics. I remember George Brett, when he took over last year with Pedro Grifol as the hitting instructor, he introduced himself to each player. And even though they knew him, he said, "Hi, I'm George Brett." And Mike Moustakas looked at him and he goes, "What are you doing?" He goes, "And you are?" And he goes, "I'm Mike Moustakas." And he'd say, "Then be Mike Moustakas. Don't try and be anybody else." And it's a statement, once again, that's almost like trying to have fun. Mm-hmm. When you're having fun, it's amazing how good things come your way. And with this team, all of a sudden, Mike Moustakas, who wasn't getting into too many great hitters counts during the year, all of a sudden we're seeing 3-1, 3-2.
Yeah.
He's seeing 5, 6, 7 pitches. He's having remarkable at-bats. And then when that pitcher makes a mistake, Mike Moustakas or Eric Hosmer or Lorenzo Cain or Alex Gordon, they're squaring up the baseball and making the pitcher pay for that mistake.
And not only that, when you see Mike Moustakas at the plate, you saw a home run to left center, and you see more opposite field hitting, and these guys are pulling their defense over to the right side of the field in anticipation of him pulling something, and all of a sudden we see him sacrificing himself for the team away from that defensive shift.
Well, here's a question I have about this team. We don't hit home runs during the regular season, but now we're hitting them. Why?
Better counts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you are in a 0-1, 1-2 count, all of a sudden you're on the defensive. But when you're on a 2-0, 3-1 count, you're in the offensive. That pitcher's got a mistake. And I think Eric Hosmer, I think Alex Gordon, I think collectively the team is standing at that plate with a confidence going, "That pitcher's got a problem. He's facing me." And I think when you're in an 0-1, 1-2 count, you're going, you're a little defensive. You're saying, "I've got a problem." And, you know, Greg made a great point. I talked about the Cain sacrifice. There was a moment in the Baltimore series in Baltimore where Mike Moustakas laid down a bunt, and he had hit a home run and a double, I think, earlier in the game. You think he's going to be swinging away. No, he gave himself up. And Ron Darling, who is the TBS broadcaster, he said, "This is so unconventional what the Royals are doing, but they're finding success with it, and they're finding success because of T-E-A-M.
That's interesting.
And I'll add to it that the Royals' number of home runs this season, 95, among the lowest, in fact, I think they are the lowest in the major leagues, is masked by the ballpark they play in.
Mm-hmm.
The dimensions are a little bit more friendly in Baltimore, and some of that power that they do have in the lineup came out when they hit in a ballpark that is a little friendlier in the dimensions.
Yeah. Well, this is something of a sacrilege, what I'm going to ask you right now, but I'm wondering if just for a moment we can look ahead to next year and what this team is going to look like after this World Series year, because who's going to be on this team, who won't be on this team next year that's on it today, Greg?
I haven't thought that far ahead. As
Steve
said,
I'm
enjoying this ride, and there are going to be some tough offseason decisions because teams change. There will be some changes.
Yeah.
Some of the guys that are on this team are not going to be here next year. But for the moment, I'm not thinking that far ahead. I'm enjoying this ride that the Royals have put me on.
Steve, what do you think?
Well, I don't think Dayton Moore has received enough credit. I know right now he's receiving a lot of credit.
He's getting it now. Yeah.
But here is a guy who did not take his eye off the ball. And every time somebody said, oh, you should trade this or you should do this, he didn't. He stayed with his plan. And even to the point that the decisions that he made during the season, the additions, like whether it was Jason Fraser or Josh Willingham or some of the other athletes that were selected, look at who they selected. They didn't get the big-name star. They got guys who had only one interest. They wanted to win a world championship.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times when you trade for a guy, that young man might be saying, I want my playing time. I want X number of at-bats. Jason Fraser doesn't care. Josh Willingham doesn't care. They've already achieved the success in Major League Baseball. Reliever for Toronto with so many other teams. But there's only one thing missing, and that's a world championship. And that's why a guy like Raul Ibanez, even though he is not on the playoff roster, is so valuable in that clubhouse, reminding of these young players to play as a team, to care about one another. It's character. And he said, will is much more important than skill in the month of October. And we're seeing that.
We're about to find out exactly how this team does on the national stage. The World Series begins tomorrow night out here at the K. I want to thank Royals broadcaster Steve Fiziak for coming in again. KCUR's Greg Eklund. Gentlemen, sure appreciate your time very much. Thanks so much.
It's a blast talking about the boys in blues right now.
Isn't it that for sure? What a thrill to be out here on this day before the World Series begins tomorrow night. Tomorrow on the show, we'll look at the psychology of young people and voting. Our special thanks to the Toby Cook staff, Amanda Shapiro, Brian Hempstead, and the entire staff of the Kansas City Royals. Our show is produced by Steven Steigman, Danny Alexander, Beth Lipoff, and Eliza Spurtis, with help from Chris Pruitt, Linda Scher, Matthew Long Middleton, and Super Royals fan Kathleen Conahan Gross. I'm Steve Kraske, and go Royals!